is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everyone, I'm Lisa Page. I've been a Tuolumne County Master Gardener since 2009, but I've been doing vegetable gardening in Tuolumne County for almost 29 years. So I've had lots of experiences, trials, and tribulations. And the reason I started with vegetable garden planning is because you want to take a look at your site. Maybe I do this every year. Now, I don't use graph paper or do it to scale, but I draw my garden beds. And then you can look at it and you can always, you know, make your own key. I make little symbols like for where I'm going to put tomatoes, where I'm putting my peppers. You can either do that ahead of time. I actually go in and I know where I'm going to plant stuff, and then I draw it in and I write it in when I plant it so that I know what's planted where, because tags always get lost in the dirt, you know, or mixed up or so. It's easier for me if I just do this, and then I can refer to this and say, oh yeah, that's the such and such pepper or whatever. So, but when you're looking at your beds, if you're new to it especially, think about anything that's going to grow tall you want on the north side of everything else, because otherwise it will be blocking your sunlight to your other plants. So I would put my tall indeterminate tomatoes towards the back of these beds, because my predominant sun in the daytime, in the afternoon, comes from this way. I've been growing down here. I'm working here on these raised beds. I'm fortunate I get to garden at two different elevations, because I live at 2,800 feet and we're at, what, about 1,800?
Yeah, 1,800.
So it's been kind of fun learning two different. So the growing seasons are slightly different, because down here I can plant a good 2 weeks earlier than I can plant at my house. So I will plant my tomatoes, or if I have pole beans or something up on a trellis, we'll all go on the backside of one of those beds. And I personally, especially if you have a raised bed and you have a limited amount of space. Now, these aren't raised beds. Mind you, they're all beds that are dug into the ground and lined with wire in spots, because I don't have a totally flat front yard. There's a good portion of the garden that's flat, but the other part drops down. So we've dug in over the years. Yeah, I have brought it up the sides about that far. You don't want to buy chicken wire or poultry wire, because it'll rust out in 5 years, and then you have to dig it all out. And I learned that from experience with this bed here and the few of the beds we did that with. Now my husband he dug down like 3 feet, because we have decomposed granite basically, and it's in a place where the developers had taken all of the topsoil out. You know how they do. And when he bought the place on this particular flat part, there was all river rocks and a doughboy pool. So we had to get all of those rocks out of there. And it was just like, it's just solid. You couldn't plant in it. So he had to jackhammer a lot of it. But we went down. But the first time we lined it with the chicken wire. And if you're going to use it, you have to make sure that the holes aren't lined up, because they'll go through those holes. But 5 years it rusted out, we had to dig it all out and get all the rusted chicken wire out and redo it again. And that's a lot of dirt to move. And we're getting too old for that now. So you use a quarter-inch galvanized, it's called hardware cloth. It's rather expensive, but I think people might use it for other things like covering vents or quarter-inch squares. And it's minimum life 15 years. So that's what you, if you have a raised bed, that was what you would put on the ground underneath your raised bed to keep the gophers out. So like I said, 15 years as to 5 years and plus. When you go to dig and you hit rusted chicken wire, it breaks apart, so you're constantly finding little bits of rusted chicken wire, so it's definitely not fun. As a temporary small cage, handmade for something that you're doing, an ornamental or even just, because, you know, early on, I didn't have all these beds necessarily. I had spots in the garden where I would did individual plants. I would make a cage like this, plant a tomato plant in it, out of chicken wire because it was easy, but that's a smaller idea because that's going to be more manageable to get out. And I still have some of those hanging around, and I forget that there's chicken wire there, and it becomes quite interesting. So you're looking for a spot that's got 6 to 8 hours of sun. More in the summertime is better because summer vegetables are heat loving for the most part, though there are some that do tolerate some shade. I found that cucumbers produce better if they're not in the full sun all day. That's for me. I found that out for a few other people that I've talked to. I've had them try shading their cucumber plants in the hot day sun because they weren't getting any cucumbers. So in my garden, there's one part that gets a little less sun during the, it'll get a little morning sun and then it gets some afternoon sun. So I'll plant cucumbers over there and they do wonderful. Even my tomatillos will grow anywhere. And once you've had them, you know, I try to rotate. Sometimes it's not as easy because of the lighting situation. I have a bed that has gotten root knot nematodes in it, so I can't really plant tomatoes in it unless they're of a resistant variety, unless they're bred for nematode resistance. You know, I've tried starving them out and not planting tomatoes there. Last year in that bed, though, I planted squash and they did beautiful. But there's nothing I can do to get rid of them. So, you know, interestingly enough, if you put a shovel in the soil where you have root knot nematodes and then you put it in another area without rinsing it off first, you can transfer them into it. And they get into your garden in California. They travel along tree roots. So it's really not an easy thing to stop because I have trees around the outside. We all have trees. Because normally they wouldn't be bothering anything, but when the tree roots get into your vegetable beds, that's a lot of times how they get there. You're going to go, how come I have these all of a sudden? Well, that particular bed at one end of it, we dug it out a couple years ago and I had balls of roots like this. So that told me that's definitely how they came in. And there is no way to get rid of them, basically. Solarizing doesn't work. I read something, and actually it was in the Master Gardener, one of the Master Gardener books, that said if you could pour boiling hot water there in the, yeah, I can stand out there with what, a propane stove and, no. So we try to live with it. You know, some tomato plants will take okay to it. But I've just decided to try not to plant them there anymore and do other things that they don't seem to affect. And this middle raised bed here has accumulated root knot nematodes. So I waited a few years before I tried a tomato in there again. But heirlooms in particular are more susceptible to them. And I put an heirloom in there again and it happened again. So for that, because for me I could rotate those somewhat too. I'm kind of going to stay away from tomatoes in that bed just because they do poorly. So you're planting your spots out. I like to plant intensively and get as much use out of the space that I have. So that's another good reason to draw and think about. If you've only got one raised bed, you can have quite a few different vegetables in there that you don't realize. Because I do, it's kind of along the lines of square foot gardening. I don't know if you've heard about that, but I won't make grids. I don't like grids. I like to just plant like a free-flowing way. But there's another one called biointensive planting, where you would normally read something would say put your tomato plants, you know, 24 inches apart. I put them as close together as 12 at times, depending on the variety of tomato. So I'll go 18 inches. I've put 4 tomato plants, big ones. You have indeterminate, which are vining tomatoes, which are the ones that just keep growing. because it means that their growth habit is indeterminate, so they'll keep growing and producing up till frost. The determinant is obviously because it has a predetermined stopping size, a basic size, and the harvest will only go through the end of its growth. So you get more of a harvest all at once, that you'll get some before and some after. But we call them bush or determinant, which are good if you have small space too. You know, because if you get those vining ones and your soil is really good, they can get, I've had them get to 14 feet. Which obviously I didn't keep them going straight up, but they came up and they plopped back over. So, but those are where you're going to get more tomatoes longer. But like I said, I've been known to grow sauce tomatoes in the determinant variety because I want a whole bunch all at once to make sauce. And I got off track. I always get off track. So after we planned our garden a little bit, we're thinking about what we're going to plant. You're going to think about your elevation, and when they list the average last frost date for Sonora, you know, all I can find is a general. So I can consider this down here Sonora for your last frost date is around May 15th, which is what they've always said in this county is don't plant till after Mother's Day. But I found up in my house, I'm in a holler too, so I get the down cold, the cold air sinks down, that I have to sometimes wait till the end of May. And with the last few years, at the end of May, even here, we've had like a full week of where the temperatures at night were in the 40s. And most summer vegetables don't like that. So unfortunately, I've kind of tended to go towards the very end of May, the beginning of June for me. So if you do go with the, you know, within the next week, let's say, just be prepared to think about protecting your plants if you see that the nighttime temperatures are going to drop below 50 for a long period of time. Because when it did that with my tomatoes one year, I actually had to replant them. They were just, it shocked them so bad that they weren't going to do anything. So it's not worth it. And then running around and trying to cover up the amount of tomato plants that I like to plant is really ridiculous.
How much?
I think, you know, let's say your tomato is only at this size right now or less, and you've got it in the ground and you've got a tomato cage around it, I would just say just throw some kind of old bed sheet or something over it just to keep the cold air from settling down on it. I've been known to take 5-gallon buckets and put them over plants that are small enough temporarily. Just remember to take them back off in the daytime, as with any cover that you're using. I mean, they do make floating row covers that cost a little bit more, but like I said, I've been known to use old bed sheet even just in an emergency. Maybe
just
not
so
old.
The cold air doesn't touch the
leaves. Yeah, it's preferably that it doesn't touch the leaves. Yeah, because then you're kind of defeating your purpose. Hopefully, I don't think that we'll get a freeze, but like I said, if you stay a week under 50, most of the plants don't like it, and some of the really tender ones, like squash and cucumbers and melons, which, you know, they were more susceptible than the tomatoes. They're going to take it a little harder. So I'd wait till you notice that it's going to start staying above 50.
You use fertilizer on your tomatoes?
I've tried to amend my beds enough that the only fertilizer that I need to use during the summer is fish emulsion. I like it because it's water soluble, and even if you don't measure it properly, you can never burn your plants with it. You can never use too much. You know, it's a really good all-around safe, especially if you're new to it. There's one brand that I like in particular. It's called Alaskan. It's gone up to $20 for a gallon jug now. But, you know, fertilizers are pretty expensive anyway. I try to amend my beds prior to planting. I will put some bone meal in there. Sometimes, too, I've noticed if I plant tomatoes in the same bed for a long period of time, that the calcium gets deficient in the bed, and you end up with blossom end rot on your tomatoes. So that can also come from inconsistent watering too. So that's what I look at first when somebody tells me that they have blossom end rot, is I say, do you water consistently? Because it takes a long time to have a calcium deficiency, I found. I recently bought some oyster shell calcium, and it's like in a flake form. And reading the box, you can even put a little in the planting hole at the time that you plant.
So I've been cutting trees.
And you can even use crushed up eggshells for that matter. As a inexpensive method.
Do you use Epsom salt?
Yeah, I do put Epsom salt in the bottom of my. You get some from that, but you have to be careful if you have already saline soil. Is that right? It can tie up a bunch of magnesium or something. Nancy was telling me. But most of us don't have that problem unless you live in way out in the middle of off of Highway 4. But I always put a little in the bottom of my tomato planting holes. I started doing that like 26 years ago, just because I heard that helps with the blossom end rot. But you know, I still have gotten it. I think that one particular planting bed that I'm thinking of is one of my oldest planting beds. So it had eventually, like over 20-something year period, gotten a little bit weaker in the calcium department. So I just added. I try to use organic amendments when it comes to fertilizers. That means they're either from a plant form or a mineral based, or like you have blood meal for nitrogen, or feather meal, or cottonseed meal. You've got the bone meal that I like to buy is a brand called Happy Frog, because it is also in a flake form. Though I think it's Job's has a really pretty good brand. It's a little bit more pellets, but I try to stay with anything. I don't like to go like never. I never use Miracle-Gro. Please don't use Miracle-Gro. What happens with Miracle-Gro is that the plants. The best way I had it described to me is that it's like the plants get addicted to it, like somebody gets addicted to drugs. So you give the plant some Miracle-Gro, and then it needs it really soon again, and then it needs more, and then it needs more, and then it needs more.
Plants on steroids.
There you go. So I try to say, you know, if you want to use Miracle-Gro on your ornamentals, have at it, but as far as your vegetables, I try to go with plant-based or animal-based or mineral-based. That's what I was trying to do. If I can get a hold of horse manure, if it's really fresh, I'll let it sit in compost for a while. Or even if you can get a hold of chicken manure, you have to be really careful if it's hot. But I bought some bags of composted chicken manure. And I put it in these beds. It looks really good. It has, if you read the labels of your bagged amendments, because you'll be surprised. This particular brand there's a planting mix that from the same company that still has chicken manure in it. It has the oyster cell calcium in it. It has worm casings in it. You know, try to go with, it's the GMB brand. I think it's supposed to stand for Garden in Bloom. But I've been really impressed with the composted chicken manure part, because I can put it right on, dig it in, and technically I could plant right in it. Whereas if you're taking your chicken manure from home that's fresh, you'd want to put that on in the fall and let it sit over winter, and then dig it in the spring, and you'll be able to plant.
How about llama manure?
Llama is probably more along the same lines as horse manure.
How about if it's mixed with sawdust?
There's nothing wrong with that. Just remember, if you have wood products that are like the sawdust, and if the nitrogen in the llama manure isn't counteracting for the sawdust, you might have to add additional nitrogen to your bed for a little while, because any wood product that you put in there will tie up the nitrogen, because the microorganisms will go to that and try to break that down, which in turn ties up any available nitrogen. So you plant your plants in there and they can't get to the nitrogen because it's all being tied up trying to decompose that piece of wood.
What's nitrogen?
Nitrogen is for your foliage growth mainly.
But
Nitrogen is in horse manure, nitrogen is in chicken manure, nitrogen is in animal manures. There's nitrogen in, any legume plants that grow, they take nitrogen from the air and they store it in their roots. So there's little teeny nodules that we can't see in the legume roots. All that vetch right there on the side of the hill is the legume family. That's fixing nitrogen into that dirt below it, believe it or not.
Clover
too? Yes. Clover does it too. So, yes. That's great too. That's great too. Yeah. Yeah, I had a guinea pig that was the same thing. Anything that eats plant material makes a good fertilizer. Yeah, so if you want to use, like I said, if you don't have access to manures per se, go for the blood meal or the feather meal or the cottonseed meal. If you have clay soil, there's something called green sand. It's kind of expensive, but once you use it, it helps break up the clay soil. It also adds phosphorus to your plants or your beds too. But that's something I read about a couple years back, and I don't have clay soil really, but it looked like it would be a pretty good investment. But I think it takes like 5 pounds for 100 square feet, and I saw a box of 5 pounds for $12. So I guess it's how you weigh it.
What's it called?
Green sand. Green sand, yep. And in your beds, you want to continue to build up organic matter anyway. So when you're adding manures from animals that eat grasses and stuff, that gives you more humus in your soil. It gives you more organic matter. Keep feeding the microorganisms. So even with the chicken manure still feeds the microorganisms. But it gives you bulk with substance. So if you've got really well amended soil, you're going to have less disease problems. You're going to have less pest problems, and your water holding capacity is going to be better. So, any more questions? Coffee grounds are good. I prefer to mix them into my compost pile. So hopefully you've got a compost pile. But you can mix them in sparingly into your beds, because good portion of our summer vegetables are more acid, like their soil a little more on the acid side. So tomatoes are acid loving, and they like the same kind of stuff that roses do. And we put, not here, but people have been known to put coffee grounds around the base of their roses because of the, so if you grow roses, that's a good thing to do too. Coffee grounds probably is some nitrogen in there. I would have to look that up, actually. That's a good question. So any more vegetable regarded questions? I obviously just morphed right into vegetable planting. But when you're going to plant your tomatoes, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but if you plant, let's say your tomato plant, I should go grab one. Your tomato plant's this big. You're going to want to bury it, a good portion of it down below the dirt, because along the stem of a tomato plant, there's all these little bitty hairs. And each one is a potential root. So if you dig your hole really deep, your tomato plant's this big, and you're gonna bury it to about up to here. And you're gonna get roots all along that, on that stem, and that's gonna give you deeper roots, which is gonna make them be able to go find water down deeper, which should take less water than you think with the tomato plants. And they get stronger and healthier, so especially if you've got an indeterminate variety that gets really tall. If you've got that much, you know, to start with, if you've got roots that you're starting with to begin with like that, and then it goes from there, you're going to have a much stronger base to hold up that big, tall plant.
Can you plant it sideways?
That when you put it, yeah, that's another method of doing it. I tend to not do it as often because I've broken too many plants. But if it's small enough, it's easier to do sideways.
I can't get past my screen that's in my...
That's fine. You can plant them sideways. Like I said, I've tried to do it with really tall ones, and I've ended up breaking them, so I shouldn't have waited for them to get that tall anyway, but so pretty soon we'll be thinking about, I like to plant like 4 tomato plants, then I'll put in a pepper plant or two in between. I'll probably put a pepper plant in between each. I use peppers next to the tomatoes because the tomatoes block the wind for the peppers. And some shade over the peppers, they don't mind too much. I mean, they're still gonna want that sun. But I found for many, many years that it protects it. And then along with that, I will also put some basil plants in there. Think of things that you like that taste good together. They usually grow well together. It's amazing. And you try to have, I will throw some marigolds in the corners. I believe in having flowering plants in the garden. Whether I have in my own garden, I have perennial herbs that come back and flower every year. I have yarrow that attracts native pollinators, and it also attracts beneficial wasps, which will take care of, hopefully, tomato hornworms if they show up. So, like I said, hopefully your beds have been amended. You're thinking about where you want to plant your plants. You know, if you haven't started them for yourself from seed, you know, look for a good healthy plant. You know, big does not always constitute a better plant when you buy them. You know, so just, if you notice back in March when it was warm, and February, I should say, when it was warm, they were starting to put vegetable plants in at the stores, like tomatoes and things like that. Well, people will run out and buy them on a warm day and plant them, and then they have to buy them again. I know that they probably do it on purpose, but so any more vegetable questions, I'm going to kind of morph into mulching and why it's important. When it said what? Container gardening? Many years I've grown in, actually some of the first vegetables I grew was when I lived in the Bay Area were in pots because I didn't have a yard or garden. I still to this day grow in pots along with the beds that I have. If you see the size of the half barrels, we have some blue ones there that are basically the same size. That's a pretty good size to start with, but for years I was able to get the black plastic ones, and I think they're 20 gallon. They're about this tall and that wide, and I would actually use potting soil mixed with my compost, and I usually grow cherry tomatoes in those on the side of my house because I wanted to grow way too many tomatoes, and cherry tomatoes take up a lot of space, so I gave them their own spot. I have grown eggplant, a full-size eggplant. Now, nowadays they have varieties that are specifically geared towards container, but that's not necessary. When I started doing that, it wasn't a marketing thing. Well, the good thing about it is that you have to be careful in the pots. Now, you can't do the same kind of organic matter on the level you do in a raised bed or in the ground because you've got that confined space. So you're better off with a container planting mix, and it'll usually have the stuff that you want. For me, I like to take some of my compost because it was costing too much to buy big bags to continue to fill it. But if you have compost or native soil that's available that's not too heavy, because if it's too heavy in those pots, it'll just compact really hard in the pot. So for years I was trying, Super Soil used to make a really good potting soil, and I would use that. Now remember, when you're gardening in containers, they're going to dry out faster. Also, you can tend to get a little bit more of a salt buildup, so from your fertilizers and stuff. And a lot of the planting mixes will have fertilizer already in it. So once in a great while, you're going to have to like really flush them just so that you don't get a salt buildup. Oh, you can have great success growing vegetables in containers. You could grow, I've grown carrots over there in those. They were a little round variety, but there's squash. You can grow one good squash plant in a barrel like that.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us.